Thanks. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, January 24th, 2023, in the state capital of Juneau, Alaska. Present today are Senators Wilikowski, Merrick, Bjorkman, myself, Chair Kawasaki. Senator Klayman will be here momentarily. I also wanted to note that we have Kerry Cooperrider here from Senate Records, and Amanda Kraft and Lisa Denny from the Legislative Information Office moderating this meeting today. Before we start, please silence your cell phones. I want to remind the members and the staff and testifiers that all questions and comments must be directed through the chair. And before testifying, please clearly state your name, title, and affiliation. And for the record, Senator Klayman is now present. The purpose of... What?
Obviously, you can go to the right room.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The purpose of today's meeting is to start off a series of reviews and discussion about last year's election cycle and implementation of ballot measure 2 over this immediate previous cycle. But before we begin, we wanted to start by taking some time to give each member maybe a minute or so to talk about their district and why they're on state affairs. Maybe any related topics that we'd like to hear. A lot of other committees are doing that. Maybe something that's important to your district and this committee. So start to my left. Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Matt Klayman. I represent Senate District H from West Anchorage. As we like to say, the more people come through Senate District H than any other Senate district in the state because the Anchorage Airport is there. Anyway, I'm real privileged to be in the Senate. I think this is a really important committee in terms of just kind of some of the broad issue things like elections, voting, access to voting, some of the things that we routinely see in state affairs that I have a lot of ongoing interest in. I think folks know I've served in the House the last 8 years, a freshman in the Senate. Just real pleased to be here and looking forward to service on the committee.
Great. Thank you, Senator Klayman. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Wilikowski, I represent East Anchorage, and had the honor of chairing this committee a decade ago, and I've always enjoyed state affairs. It's a fascinating committee. There are many wide and varied issues that come before the committee. Of course, I'm interested in elections issues, campaign finance issues, good government. I see this committee as a committee that is the public looks at for issues that deal with how do we make government run better, and I'm honored to be here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kelly Merrick, I represent District L, which runs from the edge of Jaybear through Eagle River Chugiak out to Eklutna. I'm looking forward to being on this committee. I've been in the House for 4 years and sat on the Finance Committee, where in the House, if you sit on Finance, you don't sit on any other standing committees. So I'm looking forward to participating in legislation earlier in the process. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Senator Bjorkman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jesse Bjorkman. I live in Nikiski, and I represent the people of the Northern Kenai Peninsula. Before being elected to this body, I was elected twice to the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly and served there for more than 3 years, representing the community of Nikiski. So good government is very important to me. One of the biggest things that we were able to accomplish on the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly was that we did a pretty big rewrite of our elections laws at the borough. And we did so to be very clear with the people of our borough about what our election processes were, about what the chain of custody for voting machines and voting equipment as well as ballots were, and how it was that people could know and be assured that their elections in the Kenai Peninsula Borough were safe and secure and reliable. So I'm excited to engage in some of that conversation today, as well as many other conversations regarding state government, so that people can really maintain that social fabric connection between themselves as citizens and the government of this great state.
Great. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. The uniform rules of the legislature, the standing committees are described specifically for the State Affairs Committee as having a role in programs and activities over the Office of Governor, Office of Lieutenant Governor, the Departments of Administration, Military and Veterans Affairs, Corrections, Public Safety, and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So we're going to be delving in quite a few of the issues that are interest to you and interest to the folks that are watching and listening today. We're going to start off today, though, with our presentation again on the election 2022 that we just had. And today we're going to have before us something of interest, I think, to all of us and to folks that are in the audience. Our presentation today will start with the Alaskans for Better Elections. That group has worked or did work to pass ballot measure 2 in 2020 and helped with implementation of the ranked choice voting process that we had this last election cycle. We have with us Executive Director Julie Lucky, who will provide a recap and on their take on this last year's elections. After that, we will have Ms. Jeanette Lee, the Alaska Research Director with Sightline Institute, which is an independent nonprofit research and communication center that's been tracking and analyzing data as related to the 2022 election in Alaska. We also have a number of folks that are online. We have, Alaskans for Better Elections legal counsel Scott Kendall online. We have Carol Thompson, the operations manager from the Division of Elections, for questions. We have Grace Ramsey, Alaskans for Better Elections, the co-director for Democracy Rising. And we have Chris Hughes, the director of policy for the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. And so if you want to start, Ms. Lucky, please come to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Julie Lucky, and I'm the Executive Director of Alaskans for Better Elections. I am new to the position, and I've been working for Alaskans for Better Elections for the last year as the COO, helping with the implementation and education efforts, and I just came on as Executive Director the first of this year, and so I appreciate, and I'll give a slight biography of my cast of characters who are here to answer any more technical questions that the committee might have. Scott Kendall, I think, is a known entity to most of you. He is an Anchorage attorney with experience in campaign election law. He was the primary author of Ballot Measure 2 and has defended the measure in court. He's available to answer any technical or legal questions. Grace Ramsey is Director of Programs with Democracy Rising, and she brings over 9 years' experience working on voter education campaigns across the country. Grace specializes in voter and candidate education, training development, and facilitation, and community organizing. And she did come to our state a couple of times to help out with trainings here and is a lot of energy to our education process over the last year. Chris Hughes is the Director of Policy at the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. He studies and advises on ranked choice voting implementation across the United States. He is available to answer questions, any technical questions, and I know that he has worked with the DOE on implementation and especially how to report results on ranked choice voting. So they are there to answer questions. The first thing I would like to say is thank you to the legislature for your commitment to funding the implementation education process. It was a huge lift last year for Division of Elections, and without the thoughtful guidance and of the finance committees and both bodies to put that money forward to make sure the implementation happened and the education outreach went out, it wouldn't have been possible to have the positive results that we had with the 2022 elections. Let me see if I can get the slideshow to work here. There we go. So I'm just going to go over, and I think most of you are familiar, but I wanted to go over what changed in 2022. So Ballot Measure 2 passed in 2020. There were some dark money provisions that hadn't been implemented, but as far as the 2022 elections, there were two main changes. And they applied to all statewide elections, so they follow the same two-step process. Step 1 would be the nonpartisan Final Four primary, and Step 2 is the ranked choice voting general election. So how did this change from the previous years? The special elections were different. They used to have a different process for the primary, so now the system would be the same for all elections, whether they're special elections or general elections, and that's why you saw the process repeat twice in 2022. This system would apply to all statewide elections, so that's the people that districts sent to Juneau and the people that are sent to Washington, D.C. Ranked choice voting would also be used for the presidential election, but not for the primary. The primary, I believe, is done by federal law. Step one is the nonpartisan final four primary. And the final four primary, we actually refer to it when we are training voters, the pick one primary. You pick your favorite in the primary, and then the final four go on to the general election. So the process is fairly simple. All candidates appear on the same ballot, and voters pick their favorite in each race. So for those of you who voted in the open primary prior to, I believe, 2000, and it kind of went back and forth, it's the same process for the voter. So the voter picks their favorite. They have access to all the candidates on the ballot. All voters get the same choices regardless of their party registration, similar to the open primary. So the large difference is that the top four vote getters move on to the general election regardless of party. So in the previous open primary system, the top vote getter in each party would move on. So you have one Republican, one Democrat, and so on. Obviously in this, the top four vote getters will go. So you will have, you might have two Republicans, two Democrats, or a mix thereof, or other parties. And then I didn't know if there were any questions on the process of the nonpartisan primary. So the benefits of the nonpartisan primary is all voters have access to all candidates in the publicly funded primary. So there's no more choosing a ballot and limiting choices of any voter. So there's 58% of voters registered in Alaska do not affiliate with a major party, and that allows them to pick if they like one particular person in one race and one particular person in the other race. They don't have to be in the same party, and they do not have to choose a ballot. Likewise, people who are in a political party are not limited to the people just on their ballot. And as we've seen in the last year, voters are complex, and they might like somebody at the top of one ticket or in the top, you know, in a different party in another ticket. And so this allows them to have access to every candidate on the ballot. The most competitive candidates proceed to the general election. So that would mean that instead of having the top one in each party, it's whoever gets the most votes, the top four move on to the general election. It creates less of a barrier of entry to Alaska citizens' legislature, because it is open for all voters to vote on all candidates. The favorite of those candidates moves on, and so they have a lot more choice in who moves on, and it ensures that the people that move on are really the people's choice. All candidates, including independents, start on a level playing field. So a couple of notes I would like to state is that parties still can play a pivotal role by endorsing and financially supporting candidates. A party's endorsement still matters. This leads to more competition. In districts where races have historically been decided in lower turnout primary, we see a little bit more competition at the general. So you have certain areas in our state where it seems that the primary decides who moves on, and that. Sorry, I'm a little nervous today. I don't know why. I did want to pull out one particular example in Senate District O. I looked back at the races since 2004, and obviously district lines have changed, but that district had remained a kind of a Republican stronghold. It was always Republicans who won at the end, and I thought that might be a good district to look at kind of longitudinally, since I just happened to know who was in the district, so it's easy for me, regardless of redistricting, to figure out which district it was. And over the previous two decades, the closest margin at the general election was 29%, with most races being more than 45% difference. And in this race, we actually saw a very competitive race at the general, as opposed to being kind of a blowout race, which is what we've seen in the past in this district. So to recap, it's
there's a question from Senator Klayman.
Can you remind us where is Senate District O?
So Senate District O would be Senator Shower's district, and I have and I went back and looked through I just happened to know who had won that district, and so I knew who had been in office from that district, so that was just the one that I picked for longitudinal studies. It is one we will be looking at is we want to do a little bit more data on how the nonpartisan primary affected these races, and so that's something we'll be looking at kind of more statewide. I just picked one district that I knew, but we can provide that to the committee. I found it of interest, so I'm happy to provide that to the committee as well, of the districts that we've kind of seen these non-competitive races at the primary that are now moving to the general, where more voters have a chance to weigh in. Step two for all statewide races will be the ranked choice voting general election, the process where the voters rank candidates in order of preference. If a candidate receives a majority, 50% plus one vote of first choice votes, then they win. And we did see some of those races, obviously, in 2022, as well as races that went to tabulation. So if no candidate receives 50% plus one of first choice votes, then that the candidate with the fewest votes is eliminated, and the voters that rank that candidate as their first choice will have their vote counted for their next choice. This process continues until two candidates are left and the one with the most votes wins. So in 2022 elections, 12 of the 62 elections went to tabulation, and the rest were won in round one. A note that I will make here is that we did see in the statewide races, which of course is it's a good comparison because it has the same electorate voting in all races, we did see that we had a variety of winners, where we had a Democrat, a more moderate Republican, and a more conservative Republican win in that race that has the same constituency voting for it. So there are some concerns that ranked choice voting would favor one side or another side, and what we saw in our statewide elections over the last year was that people seemed to choose the candidate they wanted, and those candidates in each race didn't necessarily slant one way or the other. So benefits of ranked choice voting, voters can express their preference of all candidates. Instead of just voting for their favorite, they can go down the line and say, of the four candidates running, this is the one I like the best, this is the one that I would pick second, and this is the one that I would pick third in all of these. A candidate needs a majority to win, which encourages candidates to appeal to a larger percentage of their constituency and elects representatives that are more accountable to their constituents because they need that broader vote so more constituents have expressed that is the person that most aligns with their own values. It allows Alaskans to vote their heart without fear of vote splitting and contributing to their least favorite candidate getting elected. And we did see some evidence of this in our previous elections. The three come from behind victories in State House Districts 11, which is I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, McKay and Groh demonstrate how ranked choice voting eliminates the spoiler effect while providing more choices for voters. So you saw in where they had two candidates that were closely aligned, that one of them didn't get as many votes. That was eliminated, and those votes went to the other candidate that was more closely aligned. What has happened in the past with the, you know, a plurality election is you can see some lack of competition when if you have a candidate that maybe isn't favored to win, then there might be that pressure for that person to be edged out because of the vote splitting. And one of the reasons that we believe that this is a voter-centric reform is that it puts the most choices in front of the voters. Instead of having somebody step down because they maybe people thought they weren't going to get enough votes, and then limiting voters' choice of that candidate, this will, by allowing them to state their preference, they can vote their heart. And then if their favorite doesn't win, then they can at least have a say in who eventually ends up in office. And I think this will be not a surprise to anybody on the committee, but here was our expectation of 2022 Alaskan elections. So we would have this long period of education and implementation. We would have our first nonpartisan primary in August and then the first ranked choice voting general in November. And here is our reality, is our implementation was truncated. Our education, we still went all the way to November, but we had to have a lot of education front-loaded to make sure that those people could fill out that ranked choice ballot in August. And we had, I think, one of the most complicated, we had the first statewide vote-by-mail election, and that had to do a lot with how redistricting, the timing on the redistricting and getting those precincts drawn and the lawsuits with that, so we didn't have our districts. And fortunately, our first election was a statewide election, so we could do the statewide by mail. And then our August, of course, was a combo ballot, which I'm sure our experts could tell us if they've seen one before where we have the nonpartisan primary on one side of the ballot and the ranked choice voting on the general. And then we have our ranked choice voting general regularly scheduled in November. And one of the reasons I really wanted to point this out is to say how remarkably Alaskans did, and again, say kudos to the Division of Election for their education and implementation efforts by having a ballot that was easy to fill out, by having a lot of education up front. Even though it was a complicated year for voters, it was the first time we had ranked choice voting and all of these complications happened, we actually had really good results as far as people being able to fill out the ballot. We'll talk about that here. So here are the numbers. So despite our challenges and the shortened education timeline, 99.8% of ballots were correctly filled out in August. So this was our combination ballot, which I would say was probably the most complicated for voters. It was their first ranked choice voting that they'd seen. In addition, they were having the regularly scheduled primary, which had a lot of candidates on it. 73% of voters ranked at least two candidates. We did some exit polling, which I can provide the details. We did put out a press release, but I'm happy to provide more details to this committee. 95% had received instructions on ranked choice voting. 85% stated it was simple. 62% supported the open primary concept. And the turnout was the highest in the primary since the PFD voter registration was established. So we had very low error rates, and I'm not sure if the committee has any questions about this. We do have some experts online, but I believe it was 342 ballots that were rejected for overvotes. We did see errors, though, in other areas, and I'll talk a little bit about that later on in the presentation, but not for the ranked choice voting. As far as filling out ranked choice voting ballots, Alaskans did a wonderful job of being able to fill those out. In the November – oh, sorry about that.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the arguments that I've heard against ranked choice voting is that it's confusing. Do you have any data? I saw your statistic there on it's simple. Do you have any data, any polling or any research on whether it was confusing to people?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we do have some data, and I can provide that. One of the things I would say is when we poll a subset of voters. Obviously, you can't call every voter. And so I think our polling numbers were pretty good. We had 85% of the voters polled said it was simple. But what I will say is the proof in the pudding is that they were able to fill out the ballots, because you can say it's simple or not say it's simple, but when you actually look at how low that error rate is, I was very pleasantly surprised to see that most people, when it came down to actually voting, were able to fill out that ballot correctly. But I'll be happy to provide – we did a little bit of exit polling after both to check on how people felt the election went, and we'll provide those to the committee.
Senator Wilikowski?
I guess I'll just throw it out. So one of the other arguments I hear is that it's undemocratic, and any analysis on – I guess that's subjective, but any polling data on that, whether people feel it's democratic, provides them more options, less options?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we didn't specifically ask if people thought it was undemocratic. We did ask about competition, and I know that Ms. Jeanette Lee will be on to talk a little bit about how people they did a little bit more of the – I'm not a researcher, but they did some research on the polling after we did it, and I know that she will provide a little bit of data on that. I believe that our recent poll said that around 60% of people said that polled thought that it was more competitive, but as I said, I will get those numbers. We're still finalizing some of those numbers, and we'll get those out to the committee.
Thank you.
All right. In the November election, on average, 99.9% of ballots were correctly filled out, which is on par with traditional single-choice elections. And what I will say is above and beyond the ability to bubble in 1, 2, 3, 4, multiple races and data points showed that voters had a good understanding of ranked choice voting. As we can see from the data, they were more likely to rank in competitive races, in races with multiple candidates, and when their first choice wasn't favored to win. And this is not polling data. This is data that researchers took out of the actual CBR, looking at how people ranked, what they ranked next. Let me see. And I can provide a little bit more of that data. We were getting things kind of finalized. There was some questions about the CBR data from Division of Elections, and as you know, they are going through some changes right now, and so we were kind of waiting for things to settle before we check some numbers. But I'm happy to give our preliminary numbers on these issues if you would like. But we definitely saw that there was a higher percentage of ranking when ranking would count, which kind of shows that voters were a little bit more sophisticated in just understanding the, you know, just the mechanics of ranked choice voting. All right, and here's what we feel are the successes. So more choice for voters, a larger, more diverse candidate pool, and more candidates from historically underrepresented groups. The candidates mirrored Alaska, and the 48 candidates in the special primary represented a broad range of political ideologies from every corner of Alaska. There was definitely a choice for everyone in that special election. Ranked choice voting didn't favor one party over another. As I had said earlier, in the three statewide races, incumbents were favored, but the winners represented different points on that political spectrum. And as I had said earlier, we have asked some folks to do a little bit more research that are better researchers than we are at ABE. And I know that Ms. Jeanette Lee will be on later to talk a little bit about the takeaways from some of the data that they got from the polling. We saw more competition overall. Voters polled thought races were more competitive. We will get those numbers to you just as soon as we get those finalized. And as I had highlighted before, competitive races moved on to the general for more where more voters participate. 40% of statewide races had more than two candidates compared to 20% of races in 2020, and 12 were decided outright with no tabulation. 50% of the races in 2022 had candidates from the same party, and that's, as we talked about, moving the competition down to the general where more voters turn out to vote in districts where there's a lot of alignment in political ideology. When you see having two people from the same party, that does give a little bit more of a nuanced choice to those voters. Vote splitting was prevented and candidates had majority support. The three come from behind victories show that the system works. And we talked a little bit about that earlier. We were seeing that when you had two candidates that were closely aligned, another that wasn't, we didn't have that spoiler effect. We had the person that aligned best with the majority of the district winning that race. Another thing we learned is Alaskan voters are complex and independent, and the system allows them to express that complexity. And I'll go over a little bit of data we got, and I'm happy to provide this in writing. In the U.S. representative race, there were four candidates. The first one that was eliminated was Buzz Kelly. 893 of his voters ranked Chesbro next. And that probably wasn't something that a lot of us thought would happen. But I think that this is where voters will see something maybe in common with candidates that you don't see on paper. Right. We saw that again in the next round where Chesbro voters, 2,209 ranked Kelly Shabaka next. So there's, voters are complex. So you can't, when you look at the system, you can't just anticipate that because there were two Republicans, a Republican will win or something specific will happen. Because there was a lot of 18% of voters crossed party lines in their top two choices, which is something that they looked at. We had some research done from the cast vote record. So we see a lot of complexity while, people do tend to stay, if a person's registered with a party, might tend to vote down that party all the way down the ballot. It's not the case for every voter. And that's why a voter-centric system that allows voters to express their preferences, we think is really, that it's a good reform and it was a successful reform. So some lessons learned. The one problem that we saw with the statute was we need to align the special election replacement timeline with DOE withdrawal deadlines. Obviously, our first ranked choice voting did not have a final four. We only had three to choose from, and so that is it did go to court. And I know that Mr. Kendall is online. Should anyone have questions about that? But that is something that should probably be looked at to figure out how to make that work. Other than that, at Alaskans for Better Elections, we feel that the reforms actually worked fairly well and the system worked really well. It was implemented well, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I just can't say enough how Division of Elections did such a great job of making sure those ballots were easy to read. And I will say that at the very beginning when we were doing our education effort, I thought, oh, what do we need? We're going to have books and videos and all of this stuff. And what I realized was what you need is the sample ballot, because it was designed well enough that when you showed someone the ballot and you said, how would you vote this ballot, they just got it right off the bat. And I think that that's incredibly important, because not everybody is going to see education efforts, but if they can read the ballot and vote the ballot fairly simply, it allows them to communicate their preferences. But we did see reasons that ballots were rejected, and I think that there needs to be more research into why ballots weren't counted, and we need to continue to find and work on these solutions. Witness signature errors and validated thousands of absentee and special needs ballots, and I know that Mr. Kendall can provide a little bit more statistics, but we all know what happened with that first statewide election when we saw the ballots come in, and again, there was no curing process, and so therefore, even though we knew it was going to be a problem, there was no way to fix that problem. And when you're looking at having a lot of ballots come in by mail, obviously that was a big problem that we should continue looking for solutions on. Hundreds of ballots from rural villages were not received by the deadline and were not fully counted. And I've heard some people say at the end of the day, 300 ballots, they didn't make a difference one way or the other. But when we talk about disenfranchising voters, every vote counts. And when you had that happen, there's got to be a way to get our ballots into the hubs to be counted. I know that you'll be hearing from Get Out the Native Vote next week, and I'm sure that her perspective will be a lot more nuanced and detailed. You know, we kind of are looking at everybody, and I know that they will have a lot more information to give on these specific problems. And then looking at a ballot tracking curing process, if we can find these problems while they're coming in, there should be a way for voters to be able to correct that ballot before it is rejected, and that way they can be heard. And that is my quick overview. I'm Julie at Alaskans for Better Elections, which is the longest email I think I've ever had. But I am here to answer any questions. I do have people online to answer any specific questions, and obviously everybody knows how to reach me. We will be following up with some of that data that's been requested about polling and anything else. I don't know if there's any questions at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Lucky, are there questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Looking back at the initiative, anything in your opinion that needs to be fixed or tweaked going forward to improve on things?
And I might, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, with your permission, I might actually have Mr. Kendall, since he was involved with the initiative, respond and has been involved with the lawsuits, respond to that problem, that question.
Yes. Is Scott Kendall online?
Yeah, hello. Through the chair, this is Scott Kendall, counsel to Alaskans for Better Elections. Senator Wilkowski, I do think Ms. Lucky brought up kind of the one obvious issue, but I just did sort of want to explain it. We have the issue with the special elections, and when special elections are run, of course, a division of elections has to sort of create a series of ad hoc deadlines, and they did so, and of course, they ran a very successful special election, but in the process of that, they actually took out one very specific deadline, which said any candidate, in order to drop out and be replaced, has to do so by a very specific deadline. The problem was they had allowed, for purposes of the special election, to allow a candidate dropout date that didn't align with the candidate replacement date. So when Al Gross dropped out of the race, they nonetheless applied that other deadline. And I think a very simple, you know, one line added to the special elections statute could say, you know, nothing more than under a special election, those two dates are the same date. And doing so would have corrected that, and it would have been curative, and we would have had the full slate of four candidates. I think Tara Sweeney would have been that fourth candidate that moved up. That's one real obvious thing. It's understandable how the division took the position, but that, you know, took the position of applying that statutory deadline. Nonetheless, I think that's a really easy cleanup that could be done.
Super. Senator Wilkowski, do you have a follow-up? Are there other questions for either Ms. Lucky or Mr. Kendall? I guess I'll just have just a real basic question. Since you were involved with some of the original initiative, Mr. Kendall, it was the why was four chosen? Was it an arbitrary number, or was it a specific reason for the top four versus five versus three?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and actually it sort of goes back to in the process of looking at reform, some of the initial research I did was actually focused on the top two systems, which you have in Washington State and California. And, you know, what we found through the research was you end up turning off a lot of voters when you get to the general election and you've got either two Democrats or two Republicans running. You've got a whole slate of voters who don't really feel represented, don't feel a reason to show up. So we moved from that from top three to top four, and it was actually through some communications with some sitting legislators who sort of said, kind of convinced me, I was sitting at top three and sort of convinced me, you know, Alaska politics are just more complicated. A little bit more is better. There is a natural ceiling, and I've actually read some research that says when ranked choice voting has failed, it is because there's too many choices. There are some jurisdictions, if you can believe it, who have no limit. And when you really see a lack of voter participation, it's when they've got a dozen, two dozen candidates, and people are simply, you know, people don't have the bandwidth for that. And really kind of five appears to be the natural ceiling. So I won't say the number four was arbitrary. It was picked with some deliberateness, but it's really just sort of this acknowledgement of Alaska politics don't really come in just two flavors, red and blue. We come in three or four, and you know, you're not always going to need all four of those slots, as we saw, but it is nice when you have them, because you really get to get a full debate. You know, you sort of get a more rounded discussion of all the issues.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Kendall. Senator Klayman.
I think this is probably for Ms. Lucky on this three on the list versus four on the list. In the November election, how many fourth place candidates broke the 5% number?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I would have to do a little bit of math, but I can get that to you very soon.
Okay.
I don't know if somebody else might. I haven't dealt that much with the data, so I don't know if anybody else that's on the line maybe knows that off the top of their head, but that's not a particular data point I looked at. I'm sorry.
I'd be curious, just a comment, be curious to see, because I have this kind of sense that there were a lot of third place candidates that got into double digits, but didn't seem like many fourth place candidates got very close. But I'd be curious if I'm wrong about that.
Great. Thank you, Senator Klayman. Are there any other questions for Ms. Lucky while she's at the stand? Okay. And as was mentioned, we will be hearing from the Division of Elections and get out the native vote at a future meeting on Thursday. I guess we can move along to the next presenter. We have Ms. Jeanette Lee. She is the Alaska Research Director for Sightline Institute. Her presentation will be on election data from the statewide primary. And we will take a second just to queue up to the slides.
Is she online or in person?
Yeah, she'll be online. And if Ms. Jeanette Lee, or I'm not sure if you can hear us now.
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you just fine. And your presentation is before us right now. Welcome.
Excellent. I'm watching the video, but it's a little delayed. So anyway, for the record, this is Jeanette Lee, Alaska Research Director at Sightline Institute. I'm calling in from Anchorage. I want to echo Julie's thanks to the legislature and, of course, the Alaska Division of Elections for ensuring the 2022 election ran smoothly, and to Senate State Affairs for this opportunity to give a look back. We move to the next slide, to the About Sightline slide. It's really just a pretty picture, but you can stare at it as I talk. So Sightline is an independent, nonpartisan public policy think tank focused on Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. In Alaska, we research and provide policy analysis on democracy and housing issues. A little about me, I don't think I've met many of you before. I spent many years as an Alaska business reporter at both the Associated Press in Anchorage and the former Alaska Dispatch News. I also worked at a federal agency providing policy and market research for proposed LNG projects in Alaska, liquefied natural gas project. I've been at Sightline since May 2020, where I publish original research and analysis on Alaska's election reform and also on housing, which is a separate program. Our democracy program evaluates and proposes policy changes that support local diversity and expand voter options and voter choice in elections. So we seek out election systems with the greatest potential for accurately capturing the aggregate preferences of voters. And in this, again, we are party neutral. In my research so far on these issues, I found that for statewide races in 2022, open primaries and ranked choice voting appear to deliver in Alaska on these fronts more effectively anyway than the previous system. So how did we determine this? Well, our team looked at the overall candidate pool in the statewide primary races for governor, lieutenant governor, U.S. House, and U.S. Senate, and we asked the following questions. Did political diversity increase or decrease? Did significantly more or fewer candidates run? How many of the statewide primaries were competitive, meaning they involved more than one candidate? And then finally, looking at one marker of diversity, did more or fewer women run for statewide office? And we gathered this data from 2010 through 2022, And after observing the changes, we then evaluated where, in these cases, open primaries and ranked choice voting appeared to play a significant role and what other factors were involved. So I'm going to walk you through what we found. And please note that our analysis focused on Alaska's regular statewide primary races, and they did not include the special primary for U.S. House. It was just too much of an outlier. So next slide. I should not look at the screen. Okay, so first let's talk about political diversity in the statewide primaries. As you're all well aware, since you all ran for office, you know about voter demographics in Alaska, and you know that about 58% of Alaskans are registered independents, and that another 5% align with third parties or political groups. Historically, though, the political identities of the candidate pool have not reflected those of voters. So as you can see here, before 2020, there were no independent candidates in the statewide primaries at all. And the two major parties really had outsized representation when compared to the party registrations of voters. And you might be wondering what happened in 2020, which predates the use of open primaries and ranked choice voting, because as you can see, there's that gray bar represents independents, and they're already showing up in 2020 in a pretty significant way. Well, in 2018 and earlier, Alaska had particularly high barriers for candidates who didn't identify as Democrat or Republican. You couldn't just hop into a primary and run as an independent. State statute required all candidates to register as a voter with the political parties running the primary they wanted to enter. I'm sorry, you probably all know this, but I'm just going through it. On the Republican side, only Republicans could run, and the Democrats had a slightly bigger tent during their primary with registered Libertarians and Alaskan Independence Party candidates who don't represent independent voters. They're a separate entity. So what happened in 2020 then, when independents accounted for more than a quarter of statewide primary candidates, right? This increase occurred 2 years before Alaska's election reform took effect. What happened was in 2018, the Alaska Democratic Party changed its bylaws, allowing independents to run in the party primaries. So that's why we have this decrease in primary dominance by major parties in 2020. Then in 2022, the state's new open primary system allowed primary candidates in both the special and regular elections to more easily opt out of the Democrat and Republican brands. And not that there's anything wrong with those brands, by the way, but 48% of the 61 candidates basically opted out. Independent candidates made up 31% of the pool, and which is their largest showing in the election years we analyzed. And interestingly, the share of Democratic candidates decreased to the lowest level in this 7 election sample, and the shares of third party and Republican candidates appeared basically unremarkable compared to previous years. So to kind of sum up this chart, the share of independent candidates came closer than any recent election to mirroring the Alaska electorate's majority independent composition. And greater political diversity in the candidate pool, especially with an independent, helped increase the chances that Alaska voters would find candidates who match their political values. Next slide.
There's a question from Senator Merrick.
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you say more than twice as many Alaskans as usual ran for Congress, do you think that had more to do with the passing of our Congressman Don Young or ranked choice voting?
Senator Merrick, you're the chair. I'm going to address that right now.
Super.
Is significant. Oh, sorry, was that?
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. I do think it did. I do think it had a significant effect. So on this next slide, we see that the number of candidates running in statewide races increased to its highest level in the time period we examined, while the races for governor and lieutenant governor only saw a slight uptick. Interest in running for both congressional seats spiked dramatically. All right, so in previous years, as you can see, it was rare for more than 10 candidates to run for any statewide seat. In 2022, in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, we saw more than double the usual number of participants. So for voters, the advantage of having more candidates is there's more choice. I'm not going to quibble about candidate quality here. This is far too subjective, but, you know, a larger field at least increases the odds that you'll see more high-quality candidates, however you personally define quality. This also gives more Alaskans without political connections the opportunity to become candidates. There's more civic connection and engagement if more people can run. But so what happened here, right? As Senator Merrick pointed out, you know, was this simply an exceptional year? Why did candidates enter these races? Well, some possibilities, as mentioned above, the open primary lowers the administrative and financial barriers for candidates who are looking to enter politics, and encouraging those who might have sat out in previous years. Maybe the novelty of the system itself encouraged more candidates to run. Just, oh, this is new, so maybe I'll try it. And then, of course, we cannot underestimate the impact of Congressman Don Young's death. The absence of a powerful incumbent in the U.S. House race likely gave more candidates hope that they could actually win. So I guess I would say to sum up with this slide that future elections likely will give us a clearer picture of whether under this system Alaska can expect larger candidate fields as a matter of course in the statewide races. Okay, next slide, please. So we looked at competition, and I think there was a question earlier from Senator Bulikowski about competition and whether people felt this is a more democratic way of voting. I guess regardless of whether they felt it was or not, it was more competitive. So before 2022, uncompetitive primaries were not unusual. Under the previous system, a candidate without an opponent essentially had a free pass onto the general election ballot. Right, voters in those cases had no choice really about whom to send to the general election. So what you're seeing here is that in statewide primary races held from 2010 to 2020, almost every Democratic and Republican nomination included, did include more than one candidate. I guess 28 of 32 of the major party nominations did have more than one candidate. So four did not. And then in the case of third parties, specifically the Alaskan Independence Party and Libertarian primaries, more uncompetitive statewide races were the norm. So you had like 11 or 14 were uncompetitive. I just also wanted to add here that Alaska didn't always have closed primaries. So in 1947, a dozen years before statehood, Alaska voters approved a blanket primary that listed all candidates on a single ballot, regardless of party. Sounds very familiar, right? And in that case, the top vote getter from each party advanced to the general. And then since then, legislative actions and lawsuits brought by political parties have changed up the primary format numerous times. With the comeback of open primaries, the statewide primary contest has become, well, I would say exceedingly competitive. I don't think that's too strong a word to use. No statewide primary in 2022 had fewer than 10 candidates, meaning voters had more choice than before the election reform took place. And finally, to kind of wrap this one up, the inclusion of independents on the Democratic ballot starting in 2020, it may have boosted independent participation in statewide primaries, as we saw in that first slide. But if you know, looking at this slide, you'll see it did little to improve competition. For instance, in 2020, there was a single candidate running unopposed in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. And I would say only the return of the open primary in 2022 brought true competition back across all these statewide races. next slide, please. So high-profile women really dominated the election cycle in the federal races. And, you know, they're not really outliers either. In 2022, nearly one-third of statewide primary candidates were women, which is the highest rate in the years we examined. So research by the nonprofit Represent Women, which advocates for reforms that improve gender parity in politics, suggests that ranked choice elections can help by reducing concerns over vote splitting between women candidates, incentivizing more cooperation and between candidates, and lowering the financial barriers for all candidates. But here in Alaska, there were a lot of factors besides ballot measure two reforms that may have led more women to run. You know, this cycle, events at the national level around all sorts of issues, including reproductive rights, may have motivated women to run. And nationwide, more women have been moving into powerful political roles, period. The number of women in Congress is at a historic high, according to a report, or it was in October, according to the Congressional Research Service. And women have made political gains elsewhere, including the vice presidency, the president's cabinet, governorships, mayor's offices, city councils, et cetera. So that's sort of a national trend that is really outside Alaska's election reform. In addition, when we looked at these numbers, we thought about, you know, we noticed that there may have been some political strategy around the lieutenant governor's race. So before 2022, candidates for governor and lieutenant governor ran in separate primaries. And then the winners of each would appear as a single ticket on the general election ballot. Reforms in 2020 changed the law, so the governor and lieutenant governor run as a single ticket starting in the primary. And so this year, all 10 primary candidates for governor were men. 8 of them tapped women to run as their lieutenant governors. To me, anyway, this looks more like a shift in our political culture than anything else. You know, I could be wrong. I'd be up for discussing that with folks. Anyway, you'll also note here that the participation of women in Alaska statewide primaries has been erratic since 2010, kind of seesawing between double and single digit percentages. And so whether the new system affected the decisions of women candidates in Alaska to run is really hard to say at this point. As is the question of whether these numbers will hold in the future, we don't know. So I think we're on to the last slide. So as Julie already mentioned, Alaska voters were unconstrained politically, and we saw candidates across the spectrum win in the statewide races. That being said, I also want to reiterate that we're working with data from a single election, and the system will require a couple more election cycles to really prove out. But there's also a lot of great data still to be processed from this election. And we're working now on an analysis across time of the Alaska legislature, looking at the sitting legislature, the winners, not the candidates. So we'll be putting something out on looking at political diversity, generational representation, gender, and race, so that can be an imperfect marker of diversity, but we'll be looking at that too. And we'll be doing something similar where we try to suss out whether any significant changes occurred and whether and or how much the election system had an effect. And so finally, Sightline has some capacity to accept a limited number of research requests. So if there's a need on the committee for data, your staff can feel free to reach out. And at the very least, I can send over a link to an article that contains all this information, including the slides, the graphics. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Lee. Are there any further questions for Ms. Lee at Sightline? Okay, well, thank you very much for participating online today. We do have some folks who are online still, in addition to Ms. Lucky with With Alaskans for Better Elections, we have Ms. Lee with Sightline, Mr. Kendall, General Counsel with the Alaskans for Better Elections. We've got Grace Ramsey, Co-Director of Democracy Rising, calling it from Washington, D.C., as well as Chris Hughes with the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center. Are there any questions for any of those folks who are participating? Or Carol Thompson, the Operations Manager from the Division of Elections, calling in from Wasilla. Okay. All right. Well, if there's no questions, just wanted to say that I appreciated you coming down to meet with us. Appreciated also you, Ms. Jeanette Lee, with the Sightline Institute coming calling in today. Wanted to just note that my coworker William John Wallace is staff to the committee. If there are further questions that any member here has, if they could forward them to our office, we'll make sure to get a written documentation back to each of the members. Let's see, our next scheduled meeting will be Thursday, January 26th here in this Belts committee room at 3:30. With us will be the Division of Elections, someone from Division of Elections, I don't know, it's to be announced, as well as representatives from Get Out the Native Vote to talk about this election cycle this year and how it was implemented. Are there any other questions from members of the committee at this point? Okay, seeing and hearing none, thank you all for being here. The time now is 4:30, and we'll adjourn today's Senate State Affairs Committee. Thank you very much.